Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room?
It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system.
If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served.
Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th.
We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And welcome back to Little Cuts, our weekly mini-sode where we dig into the things that we've been watching and playing. I'm Terry.
And I'm Mary Beth. This week we are talking about weird cable TV experiences, a witchy comedy, zombie killing, and angry fishermen.
Zombie killing. Sounds like a busy week.
I was going to say, wow, what a week. What a range of experiences on this.
I'm curious about this weird cable TV experiences.
It's like, it's not horror related. It's just, so I went away finally for a weekend. Last weekend, I went to my friend's river cottage. A couple of us went down there and we drank sangria by the water and like had a grand old time. And I don't have cable. I don't pay for cable. I don't see the need for cable. Agreed. I don't need it. But at her family's house down there, they had cable. So, and the Olympics were on, and it was like the end of the Olympics. So we thought, oh, cool. Like, let's watch the Olympics. Why the fuck not? Like, drink a bunch and watch horse, like, dressage horse stuff. It was incredible. But that's not even the experience. So I found out, for whatever reason, I did not know this was real. I knew that ESPN 8, the Ocho, was a joke, obviously, and Dodgeball. It's a real channel. And instead of watching the Olympics at one point, we turned on the Ocho because they had death diving, which was people throwing themselves off of like huge platforms and belly flopping as hard as they could.
No. What? Why?
And then they had... competitive parkour tag.
Mary Beth, are you serious? And
yes, I swear to God, I'm serious. We spent like an hour and a half watching this. It was like this giant jungle gym and a bunch of guys in t-shirts are playing tag, but they're doing parkour over everything. So they're trying to tag each other, but with parkour.
Do they start shouting parkour?
And not that I could hear, but like they weren't mic'd. So... But that was incredible because it was like either we were watching artistic swim dancing or whatever the fuck. And then we would switch to.
I hope that that's like what it's actually at the Olympics. Swim dancing or what the fuck? Artistic swim dancing. I love that.
Yep. Yep. That's what we watched while we played board games, or we were outside a lot, but we just watched a lot of really ridiculous stuff. And I had to share it because it was incredible. And I thought, I was like, this is a fever dream we are all collectively having. But can I also tell you a story from this weekend that I think everyone on this podcast would appreciate, because it is actually horror, Jason. Yeah. It isn't what I watched, but it was an experience I had that was one of the most fucking creepy experiences I've ever had. So we were in Southern Maryland, so it's like kind of in the middle of nowhere on the water. Mm-hmm. And we were all sitting outside, and it had been storming all day. And so we were sitting out on the porch, just like eating dinner, whatever, shooting the shit. And the power goes out.
Ooh.
And it's like right before sunset, so there's still a little bit of light out. But we're all like, oh, shit, whatever. It gets dark. And that's when things get fucking weird. So like, I had partaken in some substances. So I am sitting there like immediately thinking of every bad thing that could go wrong at this point, because like it was eerily quiet,
right,
and the power was out, and I was sitting there like, oh my God, this is how, like, this is fucking how every bad shit fucking happens. Like, we're in the middle of nowhere on the water. The power is out.
This horror movie.
Like, we're a bunch of drunk, stoned young adults, yep, like eating grill food and like in our Birkenstocks. Like, we are not going to make it.
You're all like the first people that die in a horror movie.
Literally every single person there was the first person to die in a horror movie. I'm the second. I have a tiny advantage. So, okay, I'm already like freaking out, like, and telling people like, are we gonna die? And they're like, you need to fucking relax. So, well, it gets, the lights go out and like the sun goes down, and it's dark. And then all of a sudden, on the breeze comes drifting music that sounds like it's from Bioshock. It's like 1920s record player, slow, just drifting from one of the dark houses.
I want to set the world.
It's that
on
vibe.
Fire.
Not that exact song, but that vibe.
Yeah.
And, like, we did not know where it was coming from. It was, like, the power was out. We didn't know what was happening. And it was either coming off of a boat or out of a house. But it was all night, like, for, like, an hour and a half, was, like, drifting on the breeze. And the vibes were so weird. And I was, like, absolutely not. I went inside. I was, like, I'm not dealing with this. Like, this is just, like, I can't. That's what I said. I'm, like, I'm done. Like, this is too much for my brain. I'm already panicking. Like, that is unnecessary. And I kept going like, Steve, what the fuck? He's like, you go inside. So
that's amazing.
I obviously survived and nothing bad happened, but everything about it felt like something horrific was going to happen. Like, when I went to bed, I'm like, they're all going to die when I go to bed. No one did. Like, it was fine. It was like the one time in a very long time that I was like actively worried about a horror movie situation happening. Like, I have not been that paranoid about it in a long time.
I mean, that sounds like the perfect horror movie setup right there. Like,
it is. Every time we go there, I think that. And, like, and nothing weird had happened until last time. I was like, nope. Anyway, that's that whole experience.
That's
amazing. Tied up into a weird little bow. It was incredible. I had the best time. It's just very funny. Talk to me about zombie killing.
So I participated in the Back for Blood beta, and Back for Blood is the kind of spiritual successor of the Left 4 Dead series, published by Valve, because that was made by, because Turtle Rock began as like a Counter-Strike developer, and then they got eaten up by Valve and they published Left 4 Dead, and then they left Valve and now they're making this, which is basically Left 4 Dead except minus the name. And I think the bones of it are really good. I think it needs a little bit of tuning. We played it on the easy. The first time I played it on the easiest difficulty. There's three difficulty settings, and it was like a breeze. There was no real challenge. It wasn't intense like that. Have you played Left 4 Dead?
Yes.
So you know how like there's that the kind of like ebb and flow of like intensity where like the hordes will come and things will pack up, and I never felt overwhelmed, I guess, playing it on the on the regular difficulty. Then we played it again later the weekend on like the next difficulty up, and it was like the spikes were just too much and it took us forever to like make any progress. So I think there's some fine tuning needs to be done, but I will say that they have like this card based system where you like spend points that you earn by completing missions on these cards, and they make you build your own deck, and you can build decks that like give you bonuses to melee attacks or give you like bonuses to being able to hold more items or that kind of stuff. So you can like build kind of like a build for your character and kind of create like, you know, like I want to be more of the supporty guy, or I want to be the more damagey person, or I want to be the more like I'm going to take the brunt of the attack type stuff. So I think there's going to be a lot of like replayability on that aspect of it. But some of the things that I loved about Left 4 Dead, I don't think it's nailed. The story, not that interesting. The characters, even though one of them is voiced by Barbara Crampton, and I loved her and I played her as much as I possibly could because she's awesome. They don't have as much banter as I remember from Left 4 Dead.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't really feel like I connected with the characters that much. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen once it finally gets released later in October. I had fun with it.
Oh, sorry. Computer froze. Yeah, I'm excited to play it. To play a game like that. I wasn't as into Left 4 Dead, but I had a ton of fun playing it. And that was the first game that actually got me really one of the first games that got me really interested in like first person shooters. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like that kind of stuff. I still don't really like that kind of game. It's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But because like I hadn't really played it, but I really loved zombies. Like at that, like I was a big zombie person at that time. Like everyone went through that zombie phase in high school, I feel like, and like but yeah, I'm stoked to play something like that again, because I thought it was fun, and I thought it was like not as hard if you're not as like into that kind of style of play. I feel like it's got an okay learning curve. It doesn't have like a huge learning curve.
Yeah, and I'll say that the beginning difficulty in this has even less of a learning curve, because it was longer. And so I remember like Left 4 Dead, I don't remember how many missions made up an act, but here it's like 8. So there's like a lot of stages you go through for each like run of it. But like I didn't think that on that standard difficulty that it was ever really terribly difficult. I think we completed every single map without dying once.
Oh wow.
Which I couldn't say really about, easy. I couldn't say about the first Left 4 Dead.
No, that I mean like it's not easy, but I could like I got it, but Jesus Christ, the waves
are definitely hard.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to I think the open like this was like a closed beta type thing. I think the open beta will be out by the time this episode drops again. So I'll be hopefully playing some more with some friends, and yeah, cool. I'm looking forward to its release.
Sweet.
So let's talk about that witchy comedy. Cause I know
we
both watched it.
So we both watched King Knight, which is Richard Bates Jr.'s most recent film. It premiered at Fantasia over the weekend, and it is very different from like his horror, like his horror-y stuff in the best way. I loved it. It is so funny and weird and sincere and kind. And so so many ways that I was not expecting, having seen like other films of his, and like I really love Excision, and this like could not be. It is both his style, but so different tonally from what he is trying to accomplish with Excision, and it is incredible. What did you think of it, Terry?
You know, I'm struggling writing my review. I'm hoping that by the time this episode drops, my review will finally be out there. But I think the best way that I can figure out to describe this is that it's like taking a 90s or early 2000s romantic comedy plot of like the guy that has like this deep, dark secret, and it gets like revealed, and he goes on like has to like, you know, go on that kind of self-reflection journey and figure out who he is, except that instead of being like a popular person that has like some deep, dark secret, it's these groups of misfits, and that his deep dark secret is that he was once very popular and voted in high school the most likely to succeed, and he was on, you know, so it's like this sort of take on that kind of trope, but it's with people that are not popular, and the fact that he was popular is like the deep dark secret, which I think is very funny in a kind of cringe sort of way, mixed with like a Greg Araki stoner comedy vibe.
It's yes, exactly. Like there are parts where it feels like You know the parts in Excision where it's like her dream sequences where she's like having sex with hot guys, mm-hmm. like it's covered in blood. They have sequences that are like interludes like that, but instead of it being sexy, it's a bunch of dudes in white and Birkenstocks jumping over like smoke and dancing around in the forest. Ah. And it's so cute. It's just so sweet. Like it's just, and the whole thing is about found family and like loving each other and yourselves completely. And it's just so genuine in that.
Mm-hmm.
But also the performances are so serious. I actually talked to him about, so I think I told you this. I interviewed him about this movie for Daily Grindhouse. And he said, yeah, I told all the actors to recite the lines like they were in Sophie's Choice.
I totally see
that. And some of these lines include things like, there's poop in your butt. There's poop in Juliette Binoche's butt. Like, really silly things said in the most serious of intonations. But it's the whole movie, which is why it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's the whole fucking movie. And it is just, and everyone in it is so dedicated to the bit. It makes it genuine because everyone is like so into it. Like, the vibe, it's just so weird. It's incredible.
It's a movie that feels like it should have high stakes, but it has like the lowest stakes possible, and yet everyone is acting as if like this is life or death situation. I totally get that Sophie's Choice reference.
So
it just
funny.
It's so good.
It's so good.
Plus, you like, get to have like him talking to a pinecone voiced by Aubrey Plaza, and a rock voiced by singer Alice Glass. Like, where else would you get that?
And Ray Wise dressed as a wizard.
Oh my god, is Merlin the best wizard?
Merlin, that's my favorite fucking wizard. It's just, it's gorgeous.
And talking about Barbara Crampton, she has a great scene-stealing performance.
Yes!
It
is a movie that is very silly, but also very genuine in its emotions, mm-hmm. and also like very empathetic. And it's just, it's not at all what I was expecting from him. And it's great. So
it's really good.
And Andy Milonakis is in it.
Yes. Who I didn't know who was, but.
It's my show. I'm Andy. Anyway, I watched the Andy Milonakis show in high school. But yeah, so that's King Knight. I don't believe it's secured distribution yet. I haven't heard anything about it or when
either.
It might be coming out. But hopefully, it's had a really good reception I've seen so far out of Fantasia, and you know, Ricky Bates is a relatively well known indie horror name, so I can't imagine it's not gonna scoop up some kind of distribution.
Yeah.
It better.
Yeah, it better. I loved it.
Yay. Oh, I'm so glad you did. I was like, I think Terry's gonna love this, but it's really weird and it could be off putting. But I figured
it hit that comedy sweet spot of like just it's very cringe in parts, and it's very, like, self-serious, but that's where the humor comes from. And I just, yeah, this was, like...
So, okay, aquatic horror.
Hmm.
That's not sharks.
Yes.
What do we talk about this week? For, I guess, our second, technically, but, like, our first full-on aquatic horror?
We talked about Orca, which surprised me a whole lot. And made me really sad, not because of the movie, but like because of all of the orcas that you see in there have their bent like fin, which is a sign of them being in captivity because it's based on like gravity. And so the fact that they're constantly being forced to like jump out of the water, the gravity bends their dorsal fin down, and that's why it flops over. That's not naturally occurring in real life. And so
Free Willy.
Yeah. And so every time I see, I learned that from watching the documentary, I think it was called like what, Blackfish?
Blackfish. Jesus Christ, that movie ruined my life.
Yeah. So after watching that, I found out about the reason why their dorsal fins flop over. It made me really sad whenever there was real orcas on screen because they all had the floppy dorsal fin, and I was like, it made me just really sad and mad. But that has nothing to do with the actual movie.
No, that's valid to bring up though, because that's valid. This movie also made me really fucking sad because boy does this show some fucked up shit.
It certainly does. Was not prepared for the baby to just be like birthed out of the orca.
I was like, is this a self-abortion scene? I was like, okay, so just some context for this. So the movie is about shocking orcas, but not in the way that like a Jaws movie where it's just an evil killer whale. It is a movie about a man who wants to kill a killer whale to bring it to captivity and get money for bringing a killer whale into captivity. But of course, there's a scientist who studies orcas who says, please do not do that. And it is she is a beautiful Charlotte, a young, beautiful Charlotte Rampling. And she basically has this like really fascinating info dump at the beginning when she's teaching a class that is like, they have a taste for vengeance, which should set you up. So this Nolan, this incredible fisherman, goes out and tries to get a whale. It goes fucking horrifically wrong. It is the most, it is a horrifying moment in this. Like this is a, was way more upsetting than I expected. So he harpoons the whale, hits the female, and he's like, what in the hell is that? It's screaming. Mm-hmm. It is screaming in pain. And then it she tries to kill herself by running herself into the propeller so she will not be brought into captivity. And then when they hoist her up by her tail to get her out of the water, she just I say self-aborts because the baby comes out as a fetus, as an undeveloped orca fetus. And while this is happening, her male whale partner is screaming and looking at her, and there is screaming going on. And there, at one point, Nolan gags, which is an incredible shot of him going, ugh! I was like, okay, respect. And then from there, it is the male orca getting revenge on Nolan for killing his wife. What am I? His female partner. That's my wife. But so the orca proceeds to like systematically destroy an entire town trying to get Nolan.
Okay. This is my favorite parts where the orca is busting the fuel line, knocks a lamp over that causes a fire. Somehow that fire goes up the hill to a power plant and explodes that. And there's just like scenes of exploding on this town.
But the best part is that it's exploding. Ennio Morricone, who did the music, his score is playing while an orca just majestically jumps out and is like framed against the flames. And I'm like, this is the best movie I've ever seen. Also, as a side note, the movie opens with Ennio Morricone's beautiful, like a giallo-esque spaghetti western score with just orcas jumping out of the water and being very majestic. And it feels like the weirdest nature documentary you've ever seen. And it is incredible.
What's so funny, though, is that you can tell that they filmed the whales at like SeaWorld and superimposed them into the water because it does not look at all like it's natural. And they're just like jumping, and they use that shot. I mean, it's the same shot that's in the explosion when he jumps out of the water. Like, they just keep repeating that same like image that they shot at like SeaWorld or something. It's it was ridiculous, and I loved
it. It's ridiculous. It is so cheesy, but like in a way that it's cheesy now but probably wasn't cheesy then. But yeah, so it's about an orca looking for revenge against the very, very graphic killing of his wife and child. I'm saying wife because it feels right because they feel like people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a revenge tale from an orca. And also, the orca saved a person at the beginning from a fucking great white shark.
Yeah. And then ate the person later. Just pulled that person right off the boat later. I made a note. It's like, just getting yanked off the boat. Hilarious. And this orca is really good at pushing things. Like, that's all the orca really does for most of the time is either ram things or just, like, pushes things. He pushes an iceberg towards the ship. He pushes the iceberg that Nolan is on. He's just, like, really good at poking things. And I loved it.
He doesn't have thumbs.
Okay. That's fair.
He's got to use his noggin in more ways than one.
But I also thought this movie tried really hard to make orcas scary, and they're just not. He's just so cute.
Oh, they scare the shit out of me. Oh, have I just think there's... Have you ever seen videos of them surfing onto the shore to get seals to eat?
Yeah, but I mean... It's just like,
yeah, okay, good. Well, that's fine. You have the context. You have the context, and that's all that matters. And I'm glad you have all the information.
But on the other side of things, there has never been, outside of captivity, a fatal attack by a killer whale on a human. Only in captivity has it happened. It has not happened in the real world, in the outside world, with, like, natural.
Was it the fuck that orca that dragged the guy underwater at SeaWorld? And everyone was like, what the fuck? And they were like, oh, he's depressed. And they're like,
fair.
Oh. But they definitely did a lot to make orcas scary. And I think, but scary, but in a way that, like, isn't the same as Jaws, which is fascinating. And that Jaws, oh, what am I trying to say here? Like, Jaws, sharks being fish and whales being mammals, and that kind of differentiating, like, oh, but mammals have more developed brains than fish. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, that interesting kind of look at that as, like, mammal, and, like, that very, very clear comparison between humans and orcas, while in Jaws and, like, movies about aquatic horror, it's very much like they are apex predators and, like, we are very different from them, which is interesting to see how that's kind of handled in these two movies.
Yeah, because I mean you get the feeling that Jaws is, like, villainizing sharks, and this movie, I never felt that the orca was villainized.
No, Nolan was the villain the whole time, mm-hmm. but Nolan was the villain not just by the orca standards, again, a phrase that I never thought I would say. the fishermen are like, you fucked up, because so the angry. whole town was like, we have superstitions, you don't fuck with the orcas. And you did, so we're not going to give you gas. We're not going to let you leave. Like, we are going to make you really realize the consequences of your actions. So, and I liked that too, because it wasn't just like, oh, haha, crazy animal in the ocean, but very much this person disturbed the natural balance of things. And he, like, was saying, oh, that's not possible about these animals. But everyone was like, actually.
Yeah, and this definitely had, like, a fatalistic feel to it, sort of in the same way that I would say, like, Moby Dick, like, it reminded me a little bit of, like, Captain Ahab with Moby Dick, more so than
I thought about that too. Yeah,
because, like, I mean it's just, it's him versus the whale, and, like, he feels that he needs to destroy it, but he also feels sad for it, because, like, randomly his wife and his wife was pregnant and killed by a drunk driver, so, like, he understands
pregnant wife driving herself to the hospital to have her baby. I was like,
yeah.
Well, that's so funny, because so he has that, like, he sees the whale and has this weird flashback when he's looking at the whale, and then they explain it later. But I was like, do him and the whale have a psychic connection? I was really, I was like, I know that's probably not the case, but if him and the whale have a psychic connection, I will think this is the best movie of all time. So.
And also has Bo Derek getting her leg bit off by an orca.
Yeah. And dying from that.
Yeah.
That seemed a little extreme that she died from that situation, but maybe she bled out. Like, that could be part of it. But
I just love that they have a house on the water, like, literally it's on the water, and the orca, like, pulls out the stilts, and the house just sort of, like, starts to collapse, and then she gets a Quint, like, moment, and then he's off with her leg.
I was like, I feel like that we probably should have better structural integrity for houses like this, but what do I know?
Do you have a house on the water, Mary Beth?
I don't. I don't, actually. I don't. Not near the water, or literally on top of the water.
That just seems like a bad idea.
No, it seems like a terrible idea.
Also, the credits song. Rainbows for your eyes. I was like, what is this ending?
I so badly, like, that made me think about how so badly I want to write. So I don't know what I want to write, but, like, credit, like, end credit song choices. They're my favorite thing of all. Like, I fucking love end credits, like, end credit songs that make zero sense. And it happens a lot in anime. But here, like, a lot of it's, like, in horror, too, there also are some hilarious, like, end song choices. So it's like, why?
It felt appropriate going into the movie that we're going to be talking about on Monday with, like, that song that gets played throughout it. Puberty Love. We'll be talking about that. But it just reminded me. It just reminded me, because, like, the song just comes out of nowhere, and it was, like, high pitched. And I'm like, what is this song? Like, dude's dead. I believe that the orca dies at the end of this? Question mark? By swimming underneath the iceberg. And then it just cuts to this Rainbows for Your Eyes end credit song. I'm like, what?
But why not?
What is this?
Rainbow. Wait, who sings that?
I don't even know.
I really, really loved it. It was scary. Intense. It was, I guess when I don't know why I think of this, when I hear of a movie like Orca, I'm like, oh, it's a ripoff of Jaws. It's not going to be as good. But I think it is on par with Jaws in ways. Hey, now.
I don't know if I'd go that far, Mary Beth, but.
I really liked it. I think it's better than Jaws. I just say parts of the tension were really good, like in Jaws.
It was very quick, too. It was a quick movie.
It's true. It was a quick movie. Well, is that how you feel about it? Okay. That's how she feels about Orca. She told me I'm an idiot, by the way. So, what aquatic horror are we diving into next week, Terry?
I am really excited about this one. We are going to watch 1980s Alligator, which isn't readily available in the United States, but is streaming on YouTube. So if you want to catch up with us, go watch it. And it's actually a really decent copy that I found on there, it looks like. It looks like it might have been ripped from a Blu-ray. It looked pretty good from what I saw. I've never seen this one. I'm really excited to watch it. I've heard good things.
I'm assuming it's about an alligator.
It is about an alligator. And it was co-written by John Sayles.
Help me remember who that is.
So, I mean, maybe he's not as well known, but like he wrote a movie called Lone Star that I remember having to watch. I don't remember if it was in high school or college, and I really liked it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He's a really good writer, in my opinion. He wrote Piranha, the original Piranha, and he wrote The Howling.
Wow. Oh shit. Okay. Cool.
And this movie, from what I've understand, is really, really good. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited to finally watch this because it's not readily available here, which sucks. And then who are we talking to on Monday, Mary Beth? I sort of hinted at it.
Alluded to it. So on Monday, we are talking to Matt Donato, the other part of Certified Forgotten, the other Matt. And we are talking about Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
And everyone, that must have been great on your ears. Yeah, it's incredible. That movie is incredible. Matt's story about this movie is incredible. Mm. It's so fun because it's not scary.
No.
It's incredible. It's absolutely great. If you guys haven't seen it, I highly recommend you watch it before the episode, just because if you need a reason to, now you have it.
It's so silly.
It's so silly.
But smart.
Yes, very smart.
But also a little racist.
Very racist. Very racist. It's very 1970s and 80s. It's just got that vibe all over it. Mm-hmm. But listeners, you've heard from us. We want to hear from you. Did you watch or play anything that we talked about this week? Do you have suggestions for movies that we should be checking out? Send us an email at scarredforlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us directly on Twitter. I am at MB McAndrews.
And I'm at Gailey Treadful.
And of course, don't forget to follow the podcast on Twitter at scarredpodcast.
And please don't forget to review, rate, and subscribe.
Thank you to Eric Power for our artwork. Thank you to Sean Keller for our music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please stay safe out there. But most importantly, stay creepy.
And until next time. We'll be right back.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
What is The Briefing Room?
It's a behind-the-scenes look at how the criminal justice system works and the lives of the people within that system.
If you love true crime, well, these are the real people who do the job every day of making sure justice is served.
Hi, I'm Detective Dave.
I'm Detective Dan. Together, we have decades of experience in local law enforcement, a profession that we think is often misunderstood.
So we're going to explore how to do it right, and we won't shy away from when it's done wrong. These are stories you'll hear nowhere else. Unique, frank, and unvarnished.
From the team that brought you Small Town Dicks, this is The Briefing Room. Episode 1 drops on August 30th. We'll meet you in The Briefing Room.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.